You know, my mom was obviously very frustrated at Kalani because he came knocking on the door trying to get me to commit to BYU like a week before signing day. And so she kind of went in there and ripped him apart a little bit. Like, you're not going to do this to us like a week before signing day. Like, we already chose to go somewhere else. And you know, he kind of did the Kalani superpower of flipping your parents over by just the way he is, right? Just
he's
like
the
getting
best.
Him to,
he's literally the best.
All right, fine, we believe you. And you know, they got my mom to agree, and we ended up switching over to BYU.
For that, for the lead, yes. For that, with a three.
He's got his J back, folks, and the eye of the tiger.
This is From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette, presented by Eddie. Happy people make for a happy business. And now, your hosts, Spencer Linton and Jimmer Fredette.
Episode 5, here we go. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jimmer Fredette, and this is From the Logo, presented by Eddie, the HR software with a soul. Great to have all of you with us for our deep range conversations about life in and well beyond the world of sports. Jimmer, what is good, brother?
Everything is great. Episode 5 already. I mean, we have Zach on. I am so pumped about this episode. I think a lot of people will be pumped about this episode. Such a big fan of his, but it's just been such a great time. I can't believe it's already been 5 episodes, right? Like, Britain was awesome last time. He is such a good dude. I'm excited to see if he gets on the field and is able to have a punt return this year, maybe in slot receiver, maybe get a little reps in the slot receiver. But he was great. So if you haven't checked that out, go back and check Britain as well. But excited about our guest today.
Well said. Once again, our purpose in this podcast is to uplift, educate, and entertain our listeners and viewers with an array of topics from current events, Jimmer's life, my life, our featured guests' lives, as Jimmer just touched on with Britton Covey last episode. And our goal is to help all of you have some fun and feel better after hanging out with us. Good vibes for all, right, Jimmer?
Good vibes for all. That's what we're going for, right? Let's go. Let's get this thing going. That's what we want.
And we are ready for the opening tip-off with our starting lineup presented today, including Jimmer's unforgettable story about how he was introduced to a basketball legend. We'll tell you who in a little bit and how this legend sought Jimmer out to formally welcome you to the league, my friend.
Yeah, he did. I think most of you would know who he is too. So excited to talk about that story.
You mentioned Zach Wilson. Our featured guest was drafted number 2 overall into the NFL by the New York Jets and has been through it with the New York media. Zach Wilson will join us in just a little bit, discusses why Miami is the perfect landing spot right now as he eyes his next chance to make his mark in the pro spotlight. And frankly, what's the best thing you learned from a guy like Aaron Rodgers? I'm fascinated as to what he will say in that regard. I know you are too, because Aaron Rodgers is one of the most polarizing figures in sports, Jimmer.
He is, and he's one of my 4 favorite quarterbacks. You know, I just love how he plays. The guy is a gunslinger. He has no mercy. He's super competitive, and he goes out there and he, you know, he throws touchdown passes, like, and it's fun to watch. He can throw off beat, and that's what I love about him. Like, his footwork, it doesn't matter where it is. His arm strength is so great that he's able to get it anywhere on the field at any time. But just an interesting dude as well, like off the field. He just has a lot of quirks about him, and some people like it, some people don't like it. So I want to ask Zach about it, because he was obviously in the room with him for a year, and I want to get to know what that looks like.
Well, you share that in common with Zach, and having Zach, or Aaron Rodgers rather, be one of his favorite quarterbacks. So, like you said, I can't wait to hear how he answers that question. He will answer some of your questions as well, and Jimmer reveals his latest top 5 rankings with some focus on unforgettable college arenas. Like I said, loaded starting lineup. You ready to do this, brother?
Let's go. Let's do it. Super excited.
All right. It begins with the early tray. 3 top of mind subjects to set the pace and get this conversation rolling with some real speed, much like a Jimmer tray right after the tip off. Did you ever want to take an actual tip and just shoot it?
I used to try to take a tip all the time. I used to be like, hey, listen, let me get your guard and let's go against me. Right. And we'll just do a guard tip off. Right. The centers. What is it? What is it that the tallest guy has to take the tip off. Why couldn't it just be two smaller guys? You know what I mean? Like, fair I don't point. Understand. Like, why not? And I, let me say, if we did that, people would see that I could jump better than they thought I could. Right. So that's what I want. I get up the ground, get off that ground nice and easily. Right. So I would have loved to have done that.
Forget touching the net. Jimmer's going to win the tip off.
Touches the top of the backboard.
And then take the ball and shoot it from 40 feet. Okay.
Yep.
This is the way. This is the way. Okay. As I mentioned, early Trey, we have three topics to hit on, and it begins with this. We are 3 weeks roughly into the NFL season. So, Jimmer, hard hitter off the top. Which teams do you believe we'll see in the Super Bowl in February? You're calling your shot early.
Man, yeah, calling it real early, right? Like, the NFL can change so much within week to week. You never know with injuries. Obviously, that's the big unknown in the NFL because it's hard for a team to stay healthy. You have to have some type of luck to be able to do that. So for me, NFC, you know, I have two teams I'm thinking about. It's hard to go against the Eagles. They're so good. They're just so good. They've done it now before. I know that they're hungry to do it again. Talking to Britton in that locker room and what that is like right now and how those guys are competing. Jalen Hurts is special. He's athletic. You can tell that he has no let up, right? He wants another championship, and they have an unbelievable defense. Like, their defense is crazy good. So it's hard to go against them. The other one that I was thinking about, I do like the Packers.
Ooh.
As a sleeper. I really do like the Packers. I think Jordan Love, Utah State guy. I think he can have a great season this year. If you like the Packers and you like, you know, Jordan Love and you like MVP odds, that might be your guy if they're going to have a good season. But he's great, but then they got Micah Parsons, right?
Yes, like, yes.
To solidify that defense. So that's my NFC. AFC, I like the Bills. I just love Josh Allen.
You're such a New York homer.
Let's go. Let's go. Josh Allen is my guy this year. I know he won MVP last year. He's getting over the hump this year. Sorry, Porter. Sorry, everybody. I'm picking the Bills to get to the finals and get to the Super Bowl because I just think it's his time. It's his time, Spence.
It's the feel-good story, in my opinion, in Buffalo. Like, the heartache that fan base has suffered.
Yes, they deserve it.
You just want them to have a shot again after, and a lot of you have seen the documentary that ESPN put out, their 30 for 30 series, The Four Falls of Buffalo. Yep. It is unbelievable that they went to four straight Super Bowls and lost all of them. All of them. And they have been on the cuff, knocking on the door against the Kansas City Chiefs in recent years and just had things ripped away from them. So they would be the feel-good story.
Yeah.
If it's not the Buffalo Bills, Jimmer, it's going to be the Ravens coming out of the AFC. And I know that they had a crazy game against each other in week one.
Yeah.
The Ravens are for real. The way you talked about the Philadelphia Eagles, I feel about the Baltimore Ravens. You have an elite MVP-type quarterback in Lamar Jackson. You have speed and weapons all over the field. Our guy, Kyle Van Noy, who was our first episode in front of the logo, is playing some of his best football. So it's interesting how similar those teams are. I wouldn't be surprised to see Eagles, Ravens in the Super Bowl. The Bills probably are my sleeper pick, like you went with the Packers.
Yeah.
And watch out for Puka Nacua and the LA Rams, Jimmer, out of the NFC. They're kind of a strange matchup and a strange team to deal with. They have the best wide receiver core in the entire league with Devontae Adams and Puka Nacua.
And they also almost beat the Eagles last year, right? In the playoffs.
Yes.
In the playoffs, they were the closest. They had the best game against the Eagles because Sean McVay is incredible. Like, the guy can game plan. He knows what he's doing. Then you got a guy in Matthew Stafford who has no fear. He is going to throw the ball, and he is going to complete the ball, and he's going to try to fit it into windows that you don't think he can. And if he can, and if he takes those chances, they work because Puka makes a great catch, or, you know, Devontae, whatever it is, you know, they're able to have a sleeper the season as well. So, well said. I like those.
We're going to hold ourselves accountable with this as well. We'll bring this back when we get to February.
Absolutely
will. How far off or how close we were. Okay, point number two. We're approaching NBA preseason time, Jimmer. This feels like the perfect time to reminisce and remember one of the greatest stories I've ever heard from you as it pertains to your first ever NBA preseason game. and what made that so unique and special? Kings, yeah. Lakers, what do you remember from that contest?
Yeah, it was, obviously being the first game, my nerves were as high as they've ever been, right? To get into an NBA game for the first time. And I was coming off the bench. So that's a little bit nerve-wracking as well, because you warm up and you get all set and you get ready, and then you sit on the bench for 7-8 minutes and you're not warm anymore. You know, you're kind of like, all right, when am I going to come in? You don't know when your name's going to be called, all that stuff, especially the first game. So my name gets called and I get into the game, and it's our possession, our ball. So I walk over to the right corner because they called a play. Sitting there, someone's guarding me. I can't remember who was guarding me, but what I do know is that Kobe Bryant was on the other side of the court in the left corner guarding one of my teammates. So I'm standing there and the ball is not checked in yet or anything like that. Kobe looks over at his teammate and he says, "Hey, whoever it was, hey, switch with me. So he walks all the way across the court to my side. And I'm sitting there like, "You want to switch to guard me?" Like, I just got into the game. He goes over, he walks all the way across the court, puts his arm right in my chest before the ball gets in. He's like, "Welcome to the NBA. I'm just like, "Thanks, Kobe, Mr. Bryant. Like, what do I call you?
You call him?
I don't really know. Like, I just like, thanks. Appreciate it. And it was me versus Kobe at that point in the game. First game of all time. That was my welcome to the NBA moment. And you probably can't get a better person to have a welcome to the NBA moment with. So just, yeah, didn't know what to do. But it was
understandably a little forearm shiver. "Oh, hey, Jimmer. Yeah, welcome, exactly. Welcome to the NBA." Yeah.
How's it?
Indeed. Oh, I love that story so much. So good.
Great.
By the way, how'd you play in that game? Out of curiosity.
I did well.
Nerves.
I think I had 8 points. I think I had 8 points in my first game ever. So I thought it was great. You know, for me, did my thing, got 10 points off or 8 points off the bench, was off and running. It was great.
Awesome. Okay, last point here after that, an awesome story. A few weeks ago, Carlos Alcaraz defeated Jannik Sinner to win his 6th major at the U.S. Open, an event that you like to attend every year. We've talked about it on previous episodes of From the Logo. My question is, when you're considering Alcaraz and Sinner, they're so dominant in their sport that it prompts the question, are there any two athletes more dominant in their respective sport right now than Alcaraz and Sinner? I had a hard time coming up with another duo like that in any other sport.
When you're saying duo, I don't think there is, right? Like when
like
you
right
say,
now,
when you say duo, I don't think so. When you're thinking a singular person, maybe, right? Like a Simone Biles, like a Katie Ledecky, like a Sydney McLaughlin, who are just winning pretty much every event.
Scotty Scheffler
is dominant right now, right? These are dominant people, but the two together, right? They've won the last 8 majors. One of the two have won the last 8 majors. And, you know, that is, I mean, obviously we had Djokovic, we had Nadal, we had Federer. Those three through a 20-year span were winning most majors, right? Those three. So those are incredible. Some of the best tennis players of all time. You could argue of who's the best. Federer is the best, but you could argue who is the best. And then you got Sinner and you got Alcaraz right now who are surpassing that.
It's crazy.
In their short period of time, right? Let's see how it continues to progress, but they're both under 23, I think. And they've already won. Alcaraz has won 6 majors already.
Yes.
It's pretty dumbfounding to see. And they are just way better than everybody else right now. And there's not a better duo out there.
Both are cheat codes. You see shots and you're like, no way they're getting to that. Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
It was a winner. It wasn't they didn't just get to it. It was a winner.
Around the post, you know, way outside, gnarly spin on it, hits the very back corner.
Yeah.
Just the shots those guys hit. So fun to watch. But I would love for our listeners and viewers, if they feel differently, to chime in. Like, you tell us, because Jimmer and I are having a hard time thinking about, again, two players right now, not all time, because you could go to like Messi and Ronaldo in soccer and be like, oh man, the way that those guys dominated the game. Like, there's an argument. We're talking right now in 2025, in the fall of 2025, are there two athletes dominating their respective sport any more with any more control than Yannick Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz right now. Send in your comments on YouTube or our social medias. Love to hear from you. That is the early tray, and we did it from the logo, no less. Okay, let's call timeout number one, Jimmer. When we return, Miami Dolphins quarterback and the number two overall pick in the 2021 NFL draft, Zach Wilson takes on the full court press. What's the number one lesson he learned from Aaron Rodgers in New York, and what Sean Payton taught him in Denver? Also, why is Miami the best fit for him right now? We have all types of questions when From the Logo, presented by Eddie, continues. This episode is brought to you by Eddie, the HR software built for small businesses who put people first. At Eddie, we believe work isn't just about payroll or paperwork. It's about people, culture, and the everyday wins that make life meaningful.
Eddie helps leaders spend less time on HR headaches and more time building teams that thrive.
Welcome back to From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette, presented by Eddie. It's time for our full court press with our VIP guest. He was selected number two overall by the New York Jets in the 2021 NFL draft, finished eighth in the Heisman voting after an 11-1 season in COVID at BYU, and now he's doing his thing with the Miami Dolphins. Yes, indeed. Zach Wilson is our guy today. Jimmer and I recorded this interview a short time ago and can't wait for you to hear the latest from a man who has officially taken his talents to South Beach. Zach, this has been an offseason of change for you in your life in many ways, but perhaps most notably, you got married. Congratulations, brother. What an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's insane. I would have never expected getting married in New York City, but it was a dream come true. It's complete opposite of what I ever envisioned in my mind, but it was amazing.
I remember, and sorry to cut you off, Jimmer, but I remember being with you, you were nursing an injury. It was in the preseason in New York before a preseason game against Tyler Allgeier and the Falcons. And
yep.
And you told me, you're like, hey, I have a girlfriend and her name is Nikki and she's awesome. Yeah. And so now you married her, Zach. What's been the most maybe unexpected or surprising part of that beginning of that relationship and to where you are now married?
Yeah, well, we grew up entirely different, right? Her family, I think her parents are from Staten Island in Queens. And so her dad is pretty much Tony Soprano. And they're on the other side
awesome.
Of the entire country. And the accents are strong. And the family owns an Italian restaurant. And, you know, and then coming from Utah, you know, it's like a complete culture clash. But we hold so many of the same morals and values, which was so special for me. And she's very similar, and her family is very similar to my family, of just the importance of family. And, you know, she was honestly, you know, extremely valuable for me in my time in New York, especially as well. I felt like she hurt like I was hurting through that entire process. And just having her there with me also kind of made our relationship grow stronger as well.
Man, there is nothing better than a good significant other, right? That is around you. It's so great. You know, go in our position when you're in professional sports, you need it. You have to have it. And it has to go both ways, right? And that's the biggest thing, that there's give and there's take for all of it, but it is amazing. But I will say, my wife Whitney is like incredibly jealous of the wedding that you guys had in New York City.
Yeah.
And what church was it specifically?
It's actually you can see on
Cathedral.
My I think I have the thing that's blocking my
face. Right there.
You
can see the
picture above
yes.
me.
Yes. Yes.
We
yes.
had the St. Patrick's Cathedral and
it was St. Patrick's.
St. Patrick's right there in New York City, and then a block Jeez. Away the venue was at it was called the Rainbow Room. It was the top floor of Rockefeller Center. And so it was truly like out of a movie. I mean, weddings in Utah, you know, you put them together quickly. People get married within 5-6 months and you throw them together in somebody's backyard or the quick wedding venue. But here, you know, it was truly a process setting the whole thing up. And, you know, they know how to do these East Coast weddings are amazing. And, you know, we were very fortunate to have her family help us put it all together. And the time and effort and money they put into it was truly amazing. And so it was like unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah. Whit just wanted me to let you know she is a huge fan of your wife and she loves the whole thing. So she's like, hey, if you don't tell him that while you're on the podcast, you're gonna be in trouble when you leave. So we made sure to get that in there. So that's awesome. So just another quick little quick hitter before we get started. You're in Denver. I live in Denver now. Love it. Been out here 13 years. You weren't there very long, but I want to talk favorite restaurant. What was your favorite restaurant while you were in Denver?
We used to go to, so we lived in Cherry Creek North. There was a lot of good ones. We went to, what was the Italian spot down there? They had the North Italia was one of them, and we really liked that one. But there was the other one that had like the honey chicken parm pizza.
Quality Italian.
Quality Italian. Yeah. We went to Quality Italian a lot. Yep. And you know the one already. We used to go there all the time, and it was just down the street. We would go walk. You know, randomly, not even special occasions, but like, hey, you want to go get Quality Italian? If we would go over there. So
You would not think that chicken parm with honey was something that went together, right? The first time I tried it was actually in New York City. I think that's where it originated, at least the first place that we had it. And then it came out to Denver, like, you gotta be kidding me.
It's coming. So good.
We went right away. So two of our favorite places, North, Quality Italian. We're in on the food, and you know, with your wife being, you know, having an Italian restaurant,
totally,
all that stuff tugs at my heartstrings. All my friends have Italian restaurants, so I'm right there with you guys. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's the best. Where do you guys live in Denver?
So we live in Littleton, south of Denver. Nice. We're not too far from Centennial, where you guys were for practice and everything. We're about 20 minutes from that practice facility, 25 minutes, right?
Great
close
spot.
To Top Golf. Yeah,
I love living out there.
It's a good place to be. It's a good place to be. I agree.
Zach Wilson is with us on From the Logo. I don't know what you guys are talking about with Denver. I lived in Grand Junction, and it was a thriving metropolis for 3 years.
Get out of here, Spence.
That's just a gas station stop between Utah and Denver.
KJCT News 8, Zach, for life, brother.
I love the people of Grand Junction, but, you know, we understand. We understand.
Hey, you gotta start somewhere. My first ever Monday Night Football game, at least covering as a broadcaster, was at Mile High Stadium. It was in 2007, and Brett Favre threw an overtime touchdown pass with the Green Bay Packers against the Broncos. But at that moment, I realized how much Denver lives and dies with their team, Zach. And we'll talk about your new organization with Miami, obviously, and your previous one with the Jets. But when they say it's Broncos country, I don't think I understood until that moment how much it means to them. So what was it like for you to recognize the Mile High magic and what football means in Denver for your short stint there?
Yeah, amazing fan base. I mean, truly stretches so far because there's not a lot of NFL teams near there, right? Even in Utah, a lot of people from Utah pull to Denver as well. And, you know, just I would say I can't remember what it was on the Jumbotron they showed every week, but just how many home games have been sold out in Denver for like the past, you know, however many years it was, they've been sold out every single week. Doesn't matter, win or lose, they show up. And what a great crowd and atmosphere that is to play for, and a great media base as well. Like, coming from New York, that was entirely different. The media wasn't huge, the fan base was huge. It's exactly how you wanted it to be. And they were passionate about that team, and it's a winning culture and winning organization they have over there.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great town. It's a sports town. It is. People don't realize that it is, because they love their Rockies. They love their Avalanche. I don't know if you've been to Avalanche, Ken, when you were.
I didn't get to make
here.
It to one, but they're fun.
They love the Avalanche. They love their Broncos, and they've won a lot, you know, recently. So it's been a really cool place to be a part of, and for sports fans. But just tacking on to that, being with the Broncos, you know, Sean Payton, probably one of the best coaches to ever coach, you know, in the NFL. He's unbelievable. He's a great mind. I just want to know, like, what is one of the biggest lessons that you've learned from Coach Payton and how he operates and why he's so consistently good with all of his teams?
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint. I thought about that a lot when I was there, and we had a pretty brutal like training camp, and you know, we would kind of go 6 days on, 1 day off. It was like the maximum amount of days you could go in a row without taking a break. And a lot of other teams I've been on, it's like three on, one off, three on, one off. And I kind of remember thinking during that time, like, nobody complained, like, for whatever reason. I don't know if it was the character of guys they brought in, the culture that he demanded, or, you know, hey, the respect you had for Sean Payton as to believing in whatever he says because he's done it before. But past teams I've been on, so a lot of the vets in the room are complaining about the three on, one off schedule. That's, you know, super easy. And there's that you know, a little bit of the chatter in the locker room of guys kind of butting heads a little bit of like, oh, why are they not giving us more time off? But then we get to Denver and it's 6-on, 1-off and nobody says a word. And it's like, well, there's obviously some sort of respect that this guy has. And when he talks to you, it's a little bit of like, you know, you're nervous as to like, okay, well, what's he going to say? But then he also keeps it friendly and will joke around with you. You know, truly a brilliant offensive mind as well. I mean, I think he demands that culture from the entire team. But on game day, what I saw from him, just being able to call it. I mean, he has that such a feel of just being able to call it and get guys open. And the amount of times in film room before the game, he would say, look, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. We're going to get this guy wide open. And then it actually happens that way. And you're like, wow, this guy really, he knows exactly what's coming, you know, and he does such a great job with that organization. And you've seen how quickly he's flipping it around and how he's helping Bo Nix in his development as a young quarterback getting there. And I loved my time just being there. It made me a lot better too.
Well, your next stop now is obviously where you currently reside, and that is in Miami with the Dolphins. And your quarterback's coach, Daryl Bevel, is a guy who was really excited to get you in the room. He has ties to Utah and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and understands what kind of culture and family situation you come from, Zach. So how do you feel like the fit in Miami is working out after you did learn so many valuable lessons in your 1 year in Denver?
Yeah, me and Coach Bev have an equal addiction for our Diet Coke. So
so a we lot always of us have are that. There with you.
Yeah. So we're getting Tua involved in it and Quinn as well. We're getting them on the Diet Coke train. But you know, he's great to be around. You know, his personality is very like similar to what I just experienced being at BYU. You know, the way that he carries himself and the things he talks about and some of his experiences through the church as well and his career and how it's affected his life. And, you know, he's a great one to be around. And then he, you know, obviously has a great mind for the game and obviously feeling that belief from me as well, which I was grateful for. And I've had a great time working with him in the QB room. And there were stories of, you know, hearing rumors back in the day if he was ever going to end up coming to BYU or whatever it was. And, you know, it's good to have somebody like that in the room.
Yeah, no, totally. That's awesome. I think it's always good when you have someone to relate to. It just is. It makes you feel more comfortable, you know, in a situation where you never know. You never know when you get to some of these teams what guys are going to be like and what the actual feel in the room is and the atmosphere. So it's definitely important to have that. But just going back, so why Miami, right? Like, take me through your thought process of how you got to say, hey, Miami Dolphins is where I need to be at this time in my career.
Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of benefit. You know, one thing I was searching for after leaving Denver was an offensive-minded head coach. I feel like that was important for me coming from New York. And I also felt like that this offense is an extremely explosive offense. I mean, I know that last year they had some injuries, some things happened, but they have a lot of pieces and a lot of ability to be a really good offense. And having Coach Bevel, one, really wanting me there, and Coach McDaniel, I felt like I was really wanted to be there as well. It obviously feels good to have a staff that wants you on the team and pushes hard to get you. And so that was part of the decision-making there. And I felt like if I ever had an opportunity to play, that it would be somewhere I could go in and succeed. I've met Tua before a little bit in the past, and he was a great person to be around. And, you know, that's obviously still holds true. I think he's awesome. He's great to work with. And so I felt like that QB room as well was something I was, you know, obviously excited about. And then after all the money I gave to the state of New York and taxes, it was nice to have no state income tax as well. So
even it out a little.
Yeah.
It's an underrated part of the deal.
Totally.
People don't think about that. Florida, Texas, you know, some of these spots where you're like, you know what? Your money goes a lot longer.
Yep.
Zach, as you look back on your NFL career and assess all of the change and ups and downs, how do you feel like you have been polished and maybe most significantly conditioned to where you sit today compared to the day after you get drafted by the New York Jets?
Yeah, it's been a crazy ride. I mean, truly. And I wouldn't change any of it, right? I wouldn't have met my amazing wife if I didn't end up going to New York. And and the experiences that I've had there. And I felt like I wouldn't be the player I am or the understanding of the game that I have if it wasn't for all of that, that adversity that I went through and the failures and being able to look back and honestly say I probably shouldn't have been playing in my first year and taking on all those scars and the trauma of just being on a team where we weren't very good. And every single week I was kind of putting that on my shoulders and feeling it like, you know, of everything was kind of my fault. And I hit a point where confidence wise, I felt like I was getting worse every single week. And so, you know, it hit a point for me that, you know, mentally I had to get a lot stronger. I had to start focusing on other things. I had to start focusing on how to just improve my game. And I felt like it really helped me, get to where I am. And then having Aaron come in my third year was the best thing that could happen for me. It gave me a whole new perspective on how to approach the game and what I'm looking at and, you know, understanding what different fronts and pressures mean and different coverages in the back end. And then he brought just an entirely different element of footwork and the thought process as a quarterback and the way that we use our brain to think about certain things as opposed to, you know, kind of playing simple. And, you know, there was a lot of like, hey, turn your brain off, you know, let's keep things simple. And then Aaron comes in and it was completely the opposite. It was like quarterbacks understand everything that's happening on the field. And so it kind of opened my eyes to playing a little bit how I used to play in college. And that was refreshing. And then to go to a place like Denver where the scheme was entirely different than what I started in the West Coast system, where the West Coast system is very, you know, turn your brain off, throw hots, get the ball out of your hands quickly, let playmakers make plays. And then in Denver, we're mic pointing every single play. You have audibles and checks at the line of scrimmage. You have a play caller and Sean Payton that's going to let you call your own 2-minute drill and stuff as well. And so, you know, I've had an experience of being able to do a little bit of everything that I feel like has led to where I feel like I understand the game now. And it's still not perfect. There's still days that I feel like trusting in what I'm seeing because of the confidence aspect of like all the scars you go through in New York, you know, getting over those things and being able to just go out there and let it rip.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to touch on New York City a little bit more, right? It's a great city. But the media is intense and there's a lot of them. Like you said, there's a lot of media, there's a lot of attention, there's a lot of exposure, and anything that happens, anything that you do is going to be out there. And you understand that more than anybody. I want to talk about how did that make you feel in the beginning, you know, going from, you know, obviously BYU, great school, not a huge market, you know, going to New York City, massive market, everything, you're under a microscope. And then talk about how, when your confidence did go down because of people talking, things not going well, what did you pull from to really get your confidence back up? How did you do that?
Yeah, well, you know, one, meeting my wife at the time and leaning on her. And then we slowly started to try and better our relationship with God. I felt like that was a big one for us too, like spiritually, just like understanding that, okay, if the worst part of my day is that I had a bad practice or I threw a bad pass, I have a pretty dang good life. And just like the realization of it's not the end of the world. I'm going to be okay either way. And that, you know, God has a plan and maybe that plan is to fail here because he has something entirely different for me in the future and trusting in that. And so I feel like that strengthened our relationship there as well. And then, you know, there was a little bit of like, letting that ego fall. And, you know, you love people talking about you for your ego. And so there's a little bit of like humility that comes with like understanding you're human and people make mistakes and you're not always perfect. And as long as you approach that every single day and say, okay, I'm going to learn from this and get better. And I'm doing my absolute best. I'm giving it everything I got. I can live with that. And I can be happy. And I can understand that where I'm at in life and the things that I've been given, I'm so grateful for. And it's more than I could have ever hoped for in my life.
Zach Wilson is on From the Logo and frankly discussing some hard things because I think it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Zach, the 2023 season, I want to say like week 14, you're the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. And we're starting to see some flashes of brilliance and you get some of that confidence back, but it just kind of felt like almost like your team couldn't catch a break and it was just hard to build on that consistency. So how did you use something like that when you literally were the best offensive player in the entire conference for a week in a very difficult situation. How do you use that to build off of, and I guess when you look back on that, help you today?
Yeah, it was a crazy year. I mean, just going back to that entire year, Aaron gets hurt on the third play of the season. And I was just excited to see what was going to happen. Like, were we the same team I had thought we were? Were we just weren't very good, you know, and I put a lot of that blame on myself. Or I was going to say, you know what, this dude truly is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Let's see how one player can take a team sport and completely flip it. So I was excited to learn from that opportunity. And then he gets hurt. And, you know, I felt like the media hype of where we were as a team was not truly where we were as a team. We weren't very good. But I was excited to get on the field. It was an opportunity for me to put better on film. And I felt like compared to my first 2 years, I was a completely different player. And unfortunately, we get to the end of the year and things don't go the way that we want them to go. And my time in New York had been cut short. And then obviously the very next year, they didn't do so hot either. And so it kind of just shows that, like, you know, the media kind of builds up this perception, and sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. And so for me, mentally, it was like quieting every single week and just trying to focus on my job, one play at a time, one step at a time. And what's the best decision I can make on this play? Sometimes taking a sack is the best thing you can do, or throwing the ball away. And I was just trying to focus on my job at the time and trying not to get so caught up in trying to make too big of plays or trying to do whatever it was. But it was a hard situation because, you know, there was still a lot I didn't get to see from that year that I was hoping I'd get to learn from seeing, you know, my all-time favorite greatest quarterback of all time in my eyes was Aaron. And so I couldn't wait to see him play, and I didn't get to see that.
Yeah. And you can see, like, in your game, you can see flashes of Aaron Rodgers' game, right? Like the gunslinger, get it out quick, you know, has a great arm, you know, throw off beat, off footwork, all those different things that you're able to do that I've seen in your game. Speaking of Aaron, I need a good Aaron Rodgers story. I need a good Aaron Rodgers. Do you have any that comes to the top of your mind of great Aaron Rodgers stories or lessons that you learned from watching Aaron or being around him?
Yeah, he was phenomenal. He was kind of like the perfect mix of like, the cool sports guy, but also like half hippie on the other side. Like he had like both worlds. He's exactly as to describe, but he had a great personality with the guys, the way he was able to like kind of almost be like that old guy in the locker room that people still respected. And he had a great balance to be able to joke around with those guys. But as far as like funny stories, I'm trying to think of ones I would actually be able to share.
I know. I understand the PG versions.
But yeah, I mean, he was a deep thinker. I mean, he would bring up a lot of interesting topics on a lot of crazy things, and a lot of his experiences with the ayahuasca stuff, and it was very interesting to sit there and listen to him, and it was a good time to be around. He just had a great personality in the QB room and was always keeping it lighthearted and fun.
Zach, you have been a proponent of the fact that you're a BYU guy. You played at BYU, and your story is well known among a lot of people in Utah, that you grew up as a Utah fan, but then your allegiance has changed. Now your little brother is at Utah. And so it's been back and forth, but I share that because again, in NFL locker rooms, you've always been like, yeah, like go Cougs. I'm a BYU guy. So what's the perception of BYU in the different locker rooms that you have worked and played in?
Yeah, they always are asking, you know, obviously the typical questions everyone gets. it's funny because, you know, it's like, are you allowed to drink coffee or soda or caffeine? There's all the different ones asking about some of the honor code rules and, you know, if you're allowed to have multiple wives, and people always have different, you know, and you got to explain it a little bit too. And the perception of the religion is very different. And so, but it is cool to have people that are curious, right? And you get to like share some light on what it actually is about. It's funny to me because people will be like, well, that sounds a lot like Christianity. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's because it is. Like it is. Still is, right? It's right. They think it's just so far off the beaten path of what, you know, Christians believe. And I'm like, it's actually the same thing, believe it or not. But it's fun to get in those conversations with people.
Yeah. No, it really is. I've had many myself, and that's how it works when you get to that level, and people just don't know, you know, about our church, which is totally fine. I love being able to speak about you know, our church and what we believe in, and I've had great discussions with some of my teammates that are from different religions, different backgrounds, and it just helps unite everyone, right? It helps that team camaraderie. It really does. Helps understand where people are coming from and who we are as people and what we believe in, and people can pull from that faith. And I just think it's awesome. Going back to the BYU Utah thing. How did you get to BYU? Like, what is that story? You know, obviously growing up as a Utah fan, understanding BYU's down the road. How did you end up getting to BYU in the first place?
Yeah, super interesting, because my dad played at Utah, and I grew up diehard Utah fan. And back when Bronco was the coach, I hated BYU and wanted nothing to do with those guys. You know, and it's crazy how once you get into the recruiting process, you're like the fan in you of just like hating one place and loving the others. It goes away and you start to kind of look at the people that are there. And so, you know, I wasn't a huge recruit coming out of high school, and I was committed to Boise State for 8 or 9 months or whatever it was. And at the time, Ty Detmer was the OC at BYU, and he really didn't pay me any attention to like recruiting or anything like that. And I think he came out to watch me throw like one time, and he had his nephew at the time was already committed to BYU. And same thing with Utah. They had Jack Tuttle, who was a huge recruit that was going to Utah. And so I didn't have much love from anybody in state. And then, you know, I was happy about Boise State. It was like, this is a great, you know, school to go to if you're trying to be a good quarterback in the NFL. And, getting very close to signing day, I want to say BYU had just lost to UMass, which I remember was kind of a low point for the team.
A tough one right there
at that point.
It's a basketball school.
Yeah. And, and going back, my dad and Kalani had always been very, very close and known each other a lot. And my first offer, this was a huge part in me switching, but my first offer I ever received was from Fessy Sitake as the receivers coach, when he was the OC at Weber State. And that was back when I was a sophomore. And he was one of those coaches that always stayed in touch, even though he knew I wasn't going to go to Weber anymore. And I had bigger offers than that, that he always stayed in touch, asked me how I was doing, where I was thinking about going. And I remember at the time, Ty Detmer had gotten let go at the end of that UMass game. And Kalani called me and just said, look, we want you to come in here and play at BYU. And he brought in A-Rod from Utah, who I knew really well from the Utah camps as a kid, and then he brought in Fessy from Weber State. And so that was like, okay, like, you know, I had a really strong urge to want to stay in the state of Utah, where I love being, and that was home for me, and be close to family and be around a lot of people, and the culture of just like a family first dynamic that BYU sets. I wanted to be around that. And honestly, like, as far as the decision for football went, it was a terrible decision. I mean, there were 9 quarterbacks in the quarterback room when I got there. I mean, I was an early enrollee. I think at Boise State, they had Brett Rippon, who was the starter. They didn't have a junior quarterback. Or maybe they had a junior, but I think he had just gotten injured. And I would have been coming in redshirting 1 year, and there was pretty much no one else. I think they had 3 or 4 guys. But I get to BYU, and I think we literally had 9 in the quarterback room. We had Stacy Connor that came in with me.
It's crazy.
Yeah, Joe Critchlow and Cody Wilstead and Bo Hodge. And I want to say, you know, Coy Detmer had just left the year before, but then Baylor Romney came in, and Jaron Hall came in April. And then we had Tanner Mangum, and it was a huge room. And I remember thinking, like, this was a terrible decision, you know?
Why am I here?
Like, this is, you know, but I wanted to be my family. I wanted to go to BYU. I wanted to, you know, like, if football doesn't work out, this is where I want to be living and going to school. And so that was why I decided to go there. And Tanner was beat up coming off of injury that year. So I got a little more reps in spring ball than I was kind of expecting to. And, I ended up earning that backup role going into the season. And then, you know, they ended up letting me play the last like 6 or 7 games. But, and then obviously a lot of those guys transferred out and had left after that point. And I was able to make it work, but it was crazy because I look back and people always ask me, like, you know, where should I go to school or the opportunity? And I'm like, I can't tell you, because mine was a bad situation that ended up working out and being the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
As you look back on that time, Zach, and that critical decision, I mean, we're big on this podcast on the moments that changed my life. Obviously, finding your beautiful wife, Nikki, was a moment that changed the forever course of your life. And selecting BYU, even when it may have been a bad decision with the nine quarterbacks, how do you feel like the decision to go with Kalani changed your life the most?
Yeah, absolutely changed my life. And I would say, not just from the football aspect of getting to play young for 3 years and you know, getting to go play my dream in the NFL or whatever. It was more like the culture he sets, the dynamic of that football necessarily, it's like, it is important, obviously, but it's not the most important thing we do in our life. And I felt like Kalani always had a good grasp on that. And I would say, I still remember a funny story of, you know, my mom was obviously very frustrated at Kalani because he came knocking on the door trying to get me to commit to BYU like a week before signing day. And so she kind of went in there and ripped him apart a little bit. Like, you're not going to do this to us like a week before signing day. Like, we already chose to go somewhere else. And, you know, he kind of did the Kalani superpower of flipping your parents over by Just the way he is, right? Just
he's
like
the
getting
best.
Him to.
He's literally the best.
All right, fine. We believe you, and you know, they got my mom to agree, and we ended up switching over to BYU. But like, I think for that reason, it completely changed my life, and now I feel like, how exciting is it that I get to live in Utah? Because that's home base for me and where I want to be, and I'm 10 minutes. We're building a house 10 minutes from Provo, and I feel like I'm always going to have that connection of you know, a huge part of my life there.
Well. From a BYU alum, big BYU fan, we are unbelievably glad you chose BYU and Kalani came in and flipped your mom because that was huge for us. We absolutely loved having you at the Y. Obviously, amazing career, and just such a good dude. We appreciate all you've done for the school and what you continue to do by being a good example out there. And it's been awesome.
Appreciate that. Maybe
one or two more questions here, but I want to know, what are your thoughts this season? Right, you're with the Dolphins. I want to touch in. What are you getting into your mind? How do you see this season going? What do you see as for yourself? I know that you're preparing, keeping yourself ready. You have to be able to do that. You know, obviously, you never know when you're going to get an opportunity to go out there and play. Whether it's someone's sick, injury, time is yours, whatever that is. Making sure that you're mentally prepared. So, what are your thoughts on this season for Miami and how you stay mentally prepared to be ready?
Yeah, we have all the pieces. We really do. I've never seen a duo of receivers between Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle like we have on this team. I mean,
so
it is
fast.
Truly incredible how good these two are. And even aside from their speed, their ability to run routes, like they're so technique sound, and they're extremely fun to watch. And then this offense is so catered to Tua's strengths as well. These ability to just throw these quick little touch passes over the middle and get those guys in space and getting the ball out quickly. And, you know, it's an exciting offense to be a part of. Obviously, week one, for whatever reason, we didn't come out to play like we kind of expected like we would. And Indy got after us. And it was one of those weird games where we never really got into a flow. And it was 17-0 before we were, you know, three series into the game. And we're sitting there like, okay, well, we're down quite a bit. This thing's already quite a bit out of hand. But, you know, I have a feeling that we're going to be able to kind of flip the script a little bit and get back to doing what I feel like I've seen us do all of training camp. And it should be exciting, but I feel like it's a great opportunity for me. It's weird being a backup quarterback, right? Because you prep, you still feel the nerves of being the starter, but you're not actually out there. And knowing you're one play away, you're not really ever sitting there easy on the sideline either, just watching the game. You're always ready. And you know, I got thrown in this past week with 2 minutes left. My first series of the game was a 2-minute drill, which is, you know, having thrown a ball in 4 hours and you go out there and you let it rip.
Get that.
Yep. Yeah. And so I think it's a great situation and I'm excited for what we have as a team.
All right, Zach, we're going to call a timeout and come back with our open gym segment where we let some fans ask you a few questions to close out our very valuable time. When we come back on From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette, Zach Wilson takes on the fan questions. Stay with us. Today's show is powered by Eddie because good work deserves to be celebrated. Eddie makes HR simple so small businesses can focus on what really matters, their people.
From hiring and onboarding to payroll and culture, Eddie helps teams run smoothly and reminds us that behind every business, there's a story worth celebrating.
From the logo rolls on, it's time to open things up to our listeners and watchers, specifically with your submitted questions from across the social media platforms and straight to our guest, which is none other than Zach Wilson today. Everybody's taking their shot, Zach. This is a true open gym format. And the first one comes in from @ColeSmith_14, who asks, and you might have already answered this partially, do you have any life lessons you learned from a mentor like Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, that's a good one. I would say from him, it was the ability to say, to kind of take the noise of the distraction of like what the media is saying and how you approach what failure truly is. And it's only ever truly failure if you don't take whatever it was that you didn't succeed in and you just do nothing about it. It's only failure if you just, if that's the way you approach it. But you need to be able to say, okay, what did I do wrong? How can I correct it? And can I go out and apply it the next day and learn from that mistake, not make the same mistake twice, and try and improve and work on that? Because those that have the most failure are those that can grow the fastest. And so I felt like from him, that's exactly what it was every single day. He'd go out to practice and be like, hey, I want you to think about two things you want to get better at today. You know, it wasn't just a free-for-all, go out and try and execute plays. It's like, there's two things I want you to focus on, whether it's your footwork or, you know, your front side when you're throwing the ball or whatever this play is that you're working on, just work on getting better at that. And if you fail at it, that's okay, because we're just working on improving. And so he had a really good outlook on what failure truly was.
That's so good. And focusing in on those details when you're at that level is the most important thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like the details, the mental and the details are what separates the good from the great. You know,
totally.
That. And so that's such good life lesson in anything, not just sports. So
totally.
All right. Next question we have here from @SethLapierce. What's your favorite BYU football memory?
Yeah, it's a good one. I would say when we beat Tennessee in Tennessee in overtime and that fourth quarter comeback of like Micah Simon cutting back and getting tackled and, you know, nope. The college rule of the clock stopping when you get a first down just in time to go down there and kick a field goal. And then the very next week beating USC at home was probably top two for me. You know, those two memories right there were probably the most fun I'd ever had playing football and being with the guys and just that feeling of big time football in big moments and coming up and getting some wins. Those were awesome.
Incredible stuff. And I'm just going to throw on the list somewhere, I'm guessing in your top five, is still the only perfect game a BYU quarterback has had, Zach. 18-for-18 as a freshman in the Potato Bowl.
Man, that sounds like my three-point percentage, you know, in some of those games.
The right receivers were catching everything. It wasn't necessarily the best throws.
Oh, great stuff. All right, this is not a question, they say, from @JacksonZumwalt, but he said, I just want to let you know I'm hyped for you in Miami. How do you feel about the fan support from BYU guys and BYU fans, Zach, as they watch your career advance into Miami?
Yeah, that's the great part about being at BYU is you got some of the most loyal fans that'll ride and die with you to the end. No matter how your career shapes out, you know, you can always fall back on the BYU loyal fans. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that no matter what happens in this league, I can go back home and be with the BYU guys and the team and have that support anywhere we go.
Truly a worldwide school.
It is. Totally.
Anywhere you go in the world, you're going to see BYU fans. It's totally. Really, it's really special. So, it's awesome to be a part of that.
Yeah.
All right, Zach, we'll finish with this. I'm just going to throw in one more bonus question. And to kind of summarize our conversation today, which we have really enjoyed and super appreciated, knowing how busy you are and using your one day off to talk with me and Jimmer. But if you could maybe offer some advice to somebody, whether it be a professional athlete or somebody who's just kind of waffling after their post-college career and trying to figure out what's right and where to go and how to handle the adversity of growing up and being an adult, given everything you've gone through, what advice would you offer someone like that?
Yeah, that's a good one. And I've thought about it. It's like, if I wasn't playing football, what would I be doing? You know, and I think some of my good friends and, past teammates and my brothers are doing the same thing. And the best thing I could ever say would just be, you know, take risk. I would say have the ability to understand that those that have become the most successful are those that step the most out of their comfort zone. And whatever that is, whether it's sports or some sort of business venture you go on, or, you know, my little brother's building my house right now, and what a step that is for him to go and do something like that. And I feel like it's those that go out and take that risk and chase after something that, you know, there's a chance you could fail, just like we do in sports. Like, I'm willing to take the risk that I could humiliate myself on TV and get embarrassed, but it's all worth everything that comes with it. The ability to go through all the struggles and the adversity, but just go try and find what you love and chase after it with everything you have, no fear, and give it all you got. Cause kind of just sitting around every day thinking about, you know, where am I going to go get a job just to earn it? You know, it's a tough life doing that. So find out what you love and chase after it.
Great stuff, Zach. Can't wait to watch your career develop. And I mean, between Jimmer and me, we think that you're going to have your opportunity, and we can't wait to watch you ball out, man.
I appreciate it.
Jimmer, it never ceases to amaze me how much we learn in those conversations. And frankly, I don't know that there's a better place for Zach Wilson to grow and potentially get his next shot than Miami right now. Maybe the San Francisco 49ers with Brock Purdy, because I know that they had a lot of interest in Zach a few years ago, but Miami feels like a good fit for him right now.
No, I agree. Miami feels like a great fit for him. You know, you have Tua there. The thing is with Tua, you just never know with injuries. You never know what can happen. He could be in and out of the lineup. He has been for the last several years. He's a great player. I love Tua. He just seems like a really nice guy and has a great arm, can get it done. But it does seem like a really good spot for him. And it feels like if Tua goes out, Zach could fill that role very easily.
Yes.
So I think it's a good spot for him. Obviously, Coach Bevel being there, really good situation, great weather. He's going to be able to throw really well at any time. Like in New York, it's not like that. In Miami, you can do that. So a good fit for him, I think, at this time.
Jimmer, you've spent plenty of time in Miami. You played for Team Miami in 3x3 for crying out loud, obviously where Zach is. And you've been to the Bay Area several times as we speak of the 49ers. Point is, you played in a bunch of different venues. But because I love rankings and lists, I think we need to lay out, let's say, the top five arenas you've played in with one notable parameter. The arenas will be specific to your college years. Maybe sometime we'll go all time, but like right now, your college years, top five arenas you've ever played in. Let's start with number five first.
Okay, we'll go number five first. That would have to be the McHale Center at Arizona. Just a lot of history in that building. Just they've done a lot, right? They've been a lot of Final Fours, Lou Olson, you know, just the whole thing. It was a really special night because that was when Jimmer Mania kind of started a little bit for me.
Yes.
Being able to drop almost 50 points there, we beat them pretty handily, and we weren't supposed to, and they went from hating us to kind of like respecting us at that point. And
they're
the fans
clapping for you. Their fans were clapping for you.
They were respectful. I loved it. And you know, they sell out, they have great fans. So that's number five. Number four, the show, if anyone knows what that is, at San Diego State. When we played there, it was wild. Every time, like they would have people in the stands that would dress up as missionaries.
Oh yeah.
And so they would have like 50 kids with white shirts and name tags,
their bike helmets on,
they're trying to get into our head. And they always had such athletic teams. They would have like a dunk contest and warm-ups. It would be right in front of their fans, they'd be going nuts, and it was a great atmosphere. So I love playing there. Number three, Utah State, the Spectrum. Utah State is a sneaky, great arena to play in. It's not very big, but it is very loud, and they are on it with their chants. Like the student section, I swear they practice it, the student sections, because they get in there and they're like, oh, they got a bunch of them, and they all know it, and they are just on it at every situation. They do a great job. They're passionate about their basketball up there. They love it. So definitely would put that as number three. Number two, the Pit, New Mexico. For those that have been there, you go down like a half mile to get into this thing, and it is like a tin roof, and that place is nuts. They have nothing else there besides their, you know, their Lobos. So they love going to their basketball game. Shout out to my guy Snake, their one and only biggest fan in the world.
Everyone's a Lobo.
He is hilarious. But yes, that is a great arena. I love playing there and didn't have a ton of success there, a little bit, but not a ton. Number one, can you guess it? The Marriott Center. I'm not gonna let you guess. It's the Marriott Center. Because obviously we had some amazing things there, but it truly is the best atmosphere in college basketball. When I was there, it was 22,000 people that you could fit in that thing, and you'd smash them in because they had benches. And I swear there was a few times where I had the floor rumbling when we were playing. It was as loud as I'd ever heard. Tons of fans, sold out every game. It was the best arena that I played in, and thanks to the Cougar fans out there, we appreciate y'all.
Love that. The shaking, the Marriott Center. Honorable mention, maybe the Glens Falls Civic Center, Jeremy? Come on.
Of course. Glens Falls Civic Center, Glens Falls High. I mean, we were rocking back then. I mean, Civic Center, when we played there, was wild. It was fun.
If you would like to submit questions or comments for me, Jimmer, or our guests on the next show, follow us on all of our social media accounts at JimmerFTL. You can also send in those comments and questions using the hashtag OpenGymFTL. The 3x3 World Basketball Update hits next, which includes why in the world Team USA can't just simply grab some NBA guys. Go to work. Oh no, my friends, it's much more complex than that. Jimmer explains the commitment involved to even compete, let alone qualify for the Olympics, when From the Logo continues, presented by Eddie. This break is sponsored by Eddie, the HR software with a soul. We're not just building tools to manage people, we're helping businesses create workplaces where people feel seen, valued, and inspired.
Eddie is proud to support the stories on From the Logo because the stories we share celebrate the soul. Kyle Van Noy and his foundation supporting foster care, Jeremy Guthrie, who is constantly serving people in every aspect of his life. It just fits together because Eddie is about people and the everyday wins that make work meaningful.
From the Logo moves into the final quarter. Throw your fours up. Let's do this. Brought to you by Eddie, the HR software built for small businesses who put people first. It is time for our USA Basketball 3x3 update. GM Jimmer is back. He has the latest on the drive to gold in 2028 from his 3x3 teams across the globe, plus your weekly rule of the game to get more acclimated with one of the fastest growing Olympic sports. Jimmer, what's happening in the world of 3x3?
Yes, our guys were just in Mongolia. And they were playing in a challenger tournament. So I'm going to explain that today. But they did great. They became in second again. They're close. They're close to winning these tournaments. But if you're in the top two, top three, you're giving yourself a chance, and they're doing great. They lost to a team named Partizan. Guess where they're from?
Artisan?
Yeah, go ahead. Guess where they're from?
I have no idea.
Serbia. Again, Serbia. Anytime you hear a team, they're from Serbia, okay?
It's okay, yeah. I should have known. I swung and I whipped, bro. Yeah. I should have got defaulted to Serbia.
It's funny. They have great teams. Serbia has great teams. So that was another game they played against and came in second in that tournament. It was great. But I was going to explain not necessarily a rule today, but kind of how this works, okay? So they played in a challenger-level tournament. That is the second highest tournament that you can play in. In FIBA 3x3 basketball. So they have all these different tiers of tournaments. There's light quests, then there's quests, then there's super quests, then there's challengers, then there's world tours.
Right? I feel like we're playing Final Fantasy, Jimmer.
Literally, it's the point system is extremely intricate. I'll go into that at some point someday. We'll need 20 minutes. But it's pretty crazy. So this was a challenger level tournament. Every tournament that's lower feeds into the higher tournament, right? So when you start the season, you have a certain amount of points and you get allocated to tournaments. And for Team Miami, they have always been pretty good. So we got allocated to a lot of tournaments. And a lot of those tournaments are either challengers or world tours. And those are the two highest. The challengers, when you're playing in a challenger event, there's money involved in all these tournaments, but in order to get the bid to the world tour, you have to come in the top three in the Challenger. If you don't, you don't get allocated to that Masters. And that's where you gain all of your the most points for your team, for yourself, for your country. It's where you win the most money. And that's where you want to be. So these Challenger tournaments, they're difficult because a lot of teams are playing in them to get to these World Tour tournaments. But if you don't get in the top three, you're out.
Yeah.
So it's just such an interesting and intricate system. It's very similar to like tennis. They built it off of the tennis system of how they have built those tournaments. Because the head of FIBA 3x3 is a very big tennis guy. So we looked at that system and he's like, we kind of are a little bit like that. So it's very interesting, but the guys did great. They've been playing really good basketball and it's fun to watch them continue to progress going into the World Tour final, which is at the end of November. So we're excited for that, but they're on the right track.
Let's go. Now we finish with this. This is more a question from me, and I know the answer because you've discussed this with me and we've talked about it, but I still think a lot of people have no idea why Team USA and you as the GM can't just go to the NBA or the G League even and say, hey, give me three high performers and let's go win gold. And it's that simple, because I think that there's a lot of ignorance into how complicated and how complex it is when you have to compete in so many events to even be, you know, able to qualify for the Olympics.
Yeah, it's an interesting system. So basically what it is the NBA does not allow their players to play in competing leagues. Okay. So the NBA, if you're a part of the NBA, you can't go and play in, you know, the Euro League, or you can't go and play in Australia. You know, you can't do all of these things. So they say 3x3, but 3x3 as a competing league. So because of that, even though it's on the off season, the guys that are under contract in the NBA cannot compete in those FIBA Challenger and World Tour events that we just talked about. In order to get qualified for the Olympics or international events, like the World Cups of the world, those types of things, you have to play in at least two events on the World Tour to even be qualified. So it automatically eliminates all NBA players because they can't get on tour to play those two events. So we have no choice. There is no choice involved in getting to play, have NBA guys come play. If there was an option, of course, we would look at NBA guys and be like, hey, this is perfect. We want these guys to come play. But that's not even an option. G League is different. We do pick from the G League. We get guys from the G League because they are allowed to leave the G League and go play in other leagues. So because of that, we do have our handful of guys that have played in the G League, but they can't be 10-day guys that are on 10 days. They can't be guys that are on two-way contracts, Exhibit 10 contracts. Like, those are NBA contracts. So because of that, that takes away those guys. But we do pick from the G League, and some of those guys are some of our best players. So yeah, it's an interesting kind of dynamic, but that's where we are right now. And until the NBA changes that rule, if they ever do or make an exception, our hands are tied on that. But that's why you have, you know, these guys that are professional 3x3 players playing. Those are the guys that we're choosing from, and they're great. And we can win a gold medal with those guys, and we are going to go into gold medal with those guys. But that's how it works.
Manifest it. I'm glad you're in charge, dude, and you're handling all the details, because it is intricate, no doubt about it. And just maybe someday, like the NFL with potential flag football in the Olympics, the NBA would allow some crossover. We'll see. But for now, glad you're the man in charge, brother. Thanks for the explanation today.
Always. Let's go. 3x3 B-ball.
Let's do it. All right. That wraps up this episode of From the Logo. Of course, Jimmer, I always offer you your final platform. If there's a final thought you would like to share before we officially say goodbye.
Yeah. Thanks to Zach again. He was just incredible today. We appreciate him. We wish him the best of luck. We hope the Miami Dolphins do well and he gets on the field this year and is able to go out there and show what he can do. And thanks to all those that have been supporting us and listening. We've had such great comments so far. Thank you for subscribing, rating, reviewing, doing all those things that help us continue to progress and get better. But give us our feedback, you know, give us some honest feedback. We know we need to get better, but we're excited about where this is heading, and it's been a lot of fun so far.
Amen to all of that. A reminder, my friends, as we close out, to shoot your shot in life. We'll see you on the next episode.